What if I told you there's a silent conductor in your brain, a hidden maestro, directing every sight, every sound, every sensation you experience? All without you ever knowing its name?
It's an incredible thought, isn't it? That something so central to our reality operates almost completely behind the scenes.
Welcome, everyone, to our deep dive into one of the most fascinating and, frankly, underappreciated parts of the human brain. Today, we're exploring the brain's silent conductor, unraveling the role of the thalamus.
And this is a topic that I find personally just completely captivating. I've always been drawn to the question of consciousness. You know, what is it that creates this seamless, unified experience of being live? And the more you read, the more you realize a lot of arrows point back to this one small central structure.
Mm-hmm. Right. For me, it's the sensory aspect. I remember the first time I learned that our brains don't just passively receive information, they actively filter and shape it. The idea that there's a gatekeeper deciding what gets through and what doesn't, that fundamentally changed how I see the world. It's the difference between a cacophony and a symphony.
And that gatekeeper, that conductor, is the thalamus. For a long time, it was dismissed as just a simple relay station, a kind of switchboard operator for the brain. But we now know it's so much more than that.
So much more. It's not just passing messages along, it's shaping them. It's involved in sleep and alertness, in our very ability to focus our attention. It's the hub through which almost all our sensory reality is routed before it reaches our conscious awareness.
Which brings up a huge question, one we're going to be grappling with today. If the thalamus is the gatekeeper to consciousness, what happens when that gate is damaged? What does reality look like, sound, and feel like when the conductor loses control of the orchestra?
It's a powerful and slightly terrifying thought. And that's exactly what we're going to unravel. We'll explore its crucial role in building our perception of the world, its deep connection to the mysteries of consciousness and sleep, and the devastating consequences when this vital structure begins to fail.
So get ready to meet the brain's unsung hero, the silent, powerful, and absolutely essential conductor of your mind.
Well, that's where things get profoundly strange and often tragic. When the conductor loses control, the orchestra doesn't just go silent. Sometimes it starts playing its own horrifying music. Take, for example, something called thalamic pain syndrome.
Thalamic pain. So pain originating from the thalamus itself?
Precisely. Imagine a stroke damages a specific part of it. The patient recovers, but then they start to experience this persistent, one-sided burning or aching sensation.
And there's no external cause. Nothing is touching them. Nothing is injuring them. The thalamus is just generating pain.
Wait, so the gatekeeper, the one that's supposed to be interpreting signals from the body, starts creating its own signals? It's essentially sending fake agonizing messages to the cortex?
It's a phantom sensation of the worst kind. And to make it even more complex, it's often accompanied by severe mood swings. It shows you just how deeply the thalamus is integrated. It's not just processing sensation. It's tied to our emotional state. The symphony and the emotional tone of the piece are linked.
That's deeply unsettling, the idea that your own brain can turn on you like that, creating a reality of pain that isn't. Well, it isn't real in the conventional sense, but for the person experiencing it, it's the only reality there is.
And that's not even the most extreme example of what can go wrong. There's a hereditary prion disease, incredibly rare, called fatal familial insomnia.
Fatal. Insomnia? You mean from a lack of sleep?
Exactly. It's a disease where the thalamus degenerates. And as it degrades, the patient gradually, inexorably, loses their ability to sleep. Not just difficulty sleeping, the actual biological function of sleep begins to shut down.
Oh, come on. That sounds like something out of a horror film. How is that even possible?
Because the thalamus plays a crucial role in regulating our sleep-wake cycles. It's one of the key structures that allows you to disengage from the sensory world and enter a state of rest. When it breaks down, that off switch is gone. It progresses until the person is in a state of total insomnia.
And that invariably leads to death, just from the inability to sleep?
Yes. It's a complete system failure, orchestrated by the breakdown of this one central hub. It's a terrifying illustration of what happens when the conductor doesn't just lose control, but slowly vanishes from the podium altogether.
My goodness, it really drives home that this isn't some passive switchboard. It's the arbiter of our most fundamental states of being, pain, wakefulness, sleep itself. It makes you wonder, if its structure is so tied to our experience, what about the variations we're all born with? Not just damage, but our innate wiring.
That is the multimillion dollar question, isn't it? We've talked about the catastrophic failures, but what about the subtle tune-in, the factory settings we each come with?
Because my thalamus is clearly not wired the same as yours.
And how would we even know? It's the lens through which we view everything. It's like asking a fish to describe water. How would my subjective experience of the color red differ from yours based on that initial filtering?
Well, think about it from a sensory sensitivity standpoint. You know, people who are just overwhelmed by loud noises or bright lights,
or people who can't stand the feeling of certain fabrics on their skin. Is that, on some fundamental level, a thalamic tuning issue?
Is their gatekeeper just letting too much raw data through to the cortex?
That makes a lot of sense. The cortex gets overloaded because the bouncer at the front door is letting everyone in with no discretion.
Exactly. And then you flip it. What about people who are hyposensitive, who need intense sensory input to feel, well, to feel anything? Is their gatekeeper too restrictive? Is it turning away signals that most of us would register?
Huh. So you're suggesting that a huge part of what we call personality, being an introvert who prefers quiet spaces versus an extrovert who craves the energy of a crowd, could be rooted in the basic biophysics of this one structure.
I think it has to be part of the equation. It's the initial interface between the world and your conscious mind. I mean, I have to wonder about creativity.
My job is to find connections between things that don't seem connected. Is my thalamus just a little leakier?
Does it allow more seemingly irrelevant data to slip through the cracks, giving my cortex more unusual ingredients to cook with?
That's a wild thought. So an artist's inspiration might literally be a different, perhaps wider, stream of sensory data being fed to the conscious brain. It's not that they're making up more, it's that they're being given more to work with.
It could be. Maybe that's the difference between a focused analytical mind and a more associative creative one. The analytical mind has a conductor that says, okay, we are only listening to the string section right now. Nothing else matters. The creative mind's conductor might be letting a little bit of the woodwinds and the percussion bleed through, creating unexpected harmonies.
But that also sounds incredibly distracting. If your conductor is constantly letting other instruments chime in, how do you ever focus on the main melody? It feels like a double-edged sword.
Oh, it is. It absolutely is. That's the razor's edge between a creative spark and an inability to focus at all. It's the difference between a muse and just noise.
And maybe that's where the cortex comes in. The thalamus might propose the sensory input, but the cortex has to be able to handle it, to organize it.
Right. It's not a one-way street. We're talking about those thalamocortical loops, that constant chatter between the two. The cortex is always sending messages back down, isn't it? It's telling the thalamus what to prioritize. It's the top-down control.
It's the feedback loop. Hey, that sound, that's important. Let more of that through. Or that hum from the refrigerator, we can ignore that, turn that down.
So maybe something like true deep focus, that flow state we all chase, is just a moment when the cortex and the thalamus are in perfect harmonious agreement. The cortex gives a clear command and the conductor executes it flawlessly, silencing everything else.
And that harmony. That perfect agreement is probably the most beautiful and maybe the most fleeting state we can achieve. It's not just focus.
It's the feeling of being completely, effortlessly present. The world just flows, the conductor and the orchestra become one.
It's mind-boggling to reframe it that way. That something we describe in such poetic terms, a flow state being in the zone, might boil down to this incredibly elegant high-speed negotiation between two parts of our brain.
But it leads me with one final, slightly unnerving thought. We've talked about what happens when it's damaged and what happens when it's in perfect sync. But what about the day-to-day noise?
What about anxiety?
Oh! Yeah, if focus is the cortex telling the thalamus, silence everything but the violins, then anxiety must be the cortex screaming, I need to hear everything. The rustle in the leaves, the creak in the floor, every possible threat, let it all through now.
It's a conductor forced into a state of hypervigilance. The gatekeeper is ordered to throw the gates wide open, not for creativity, but for survival, and the cortex is just flooded, overwhelmed by a reality that the thalamus has been commanded to create.
That's a sobering point. It suggests that conditions like chronic anxiety or even PTSD aren't just a state of mind, but a physical trained loop. The cortex has, through experience, taught the thalamus that the world is unsafe, and the thalamus is now dutifully, tragically, executing that command.
Which I think brings us full circle. We started this journey by calling the thalamus a silent conductor, this hidden maestro. But after everything we've discussed, it doesn't feel so silent to me anymore. It feels like it's in a constant, roiling conversation with the rest of the brain.
It's not a monologue from the conductor's podium. It's a duet, a lifelong duet between this central hub and the thinking, feeling cortex, each one shaping the other.
Mm.
It's humbling, really, to think that our entire conscious experience, from the simple sensation of warmth on our skin to the most profound states of focus and creativity, and even our deepest anxieties, is all built on this partnership, this intricate, invisible dance in the dark.
It is. So I suppose the final thought, for me at least, is one of appreciation. The next time you lose yourself in a piece of music, or feel the sharp sting of a cold wind, or even just manage to tune out the world to read a single sentence, maybe take a second to acknowledge the maestro, the silent conductor, working tirelessly to turn the raw noise of the universe into your personal symphony.
A beautiful way to put it. Well, that is all the time we have for today. Thank you all for joining us on this deep dive into the brain's unsung hero.
It's been a fascinating exploration. We hope it's given you a new perspective on the incredible architecture of your own mind. Until next time, stay curious.